Hey, everybody, it's Becky Davidson, and I want to welcome you to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. I'm so glad that you are joining us for this episode, and trust me, when you get to hear this podcast, you are going to be so glad that you are here as well. I had the opportunity to have a conversation back at the end of 2019 with our friend Dr. Steve Gersovich. And Steve is a child and adolescent psychiatrist. He also is the president and founder of Key Ministry. And he does so much to help train churches on how to love and serve families who are dealing with mental illness. He also wrote a book called Mental Health in the Church that is just a fabulous resource for churches who are wanting to know how to come alongside and love and serve special needs families. I invited our friend here at the office, Kim Thorpe, to be a part of this conversation as well because she leads the special needs ministry at her home church. And I wanted her to be able to ask questions that some of you might also have in relation to how to love and serve families who are affected by mental illness. So get ready because this podcast is filled with so much information. Kim and I learned so much, and we are so grateful for Dr. Steve coming and sharing his wealth of knowledge with us. So let me introduce you to my friend from Key Ministry, Dr. Steve Gersovich. Hey, Steve, thank you so much for being here with us today. I'm just honored that you came all the way from Cleveland this morning, not just to be here for our podcast, but we're thankful that you drove up today to have lunch with us and just have this great conversation about mental health in the church. And I'm going to let you pronounce your last name for us because I never get it correct, so I'm going to let you do it.
Gersovich.
Okay, I'm going to have to practice this. Yeah. So, and I've got Kim here from the Rising Above office joining us too, because Kim leads the special needs ministry at her home church, the River Community Church. And I thought it was important to hear her perspective and her questions as we look at mental health in the church.
Absolutely. I kind of jumped in on this conversation.
So I'm glad that you're here too, because quite honestly, Steve, it's like I was telling you, this is, you know, I've lived the special needs mom life for 22 years as being John Alex's mom, but mental health and the church is foreign to me. And so I am thrilled to be able to have this conversation, to learn from you just about the barriers that families who have a child with mental illness, what they face in their struggle of trying to attend church and what the church can do to come alongside these families. So I'm super excited to have this conversation with you. And I'm going to just call you Dr. Steve today, if you're okay with that, because, you know, I know I'll mess it up. So we're just going to call you Dr. Steve for today's purposes. But so share a little bit about your background and about your family.
So I am a child and adolescent psychiatrist by training. Going way back background-wise, I got accepted in medical school when I was a senior in high school.
Wow.
Went through medical school. Residency at Cleveland Clinic, Child Psychiatry Fellowship at Case Western Reserve. And about 5 or 6 years after I finished training, I was serving on the elder board of our church when we're having a meeting one night, and Libby Peterson, who at the time was our children's ministry director, came and did a presentation for the board. And our church had a number of families. This is 1997, probably, we're talking about. And so there were a number of families in the church that had gone to Russia and Bulgaria and had adopted some kids with some very complex emotional, behavioral, and developmental disabilities. And these are people who are stalwarts of the church, key volunteers. They are people who are in leadership positions. And a lot of those families were struggling to stay involved with church, to come to worship services, to stay in a small group, to maintain their volunteer responsibilities because of the challenges that they were experiencing related to these children who'd come into their homes. So I'm sitting there listening to this. And at the time, we probably had one of the largest outpatient child psychiatry practices in Cleveland. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, I wonder how much of a problem church is for the kinds of families that would be coming through a practice like ours. And so that we probably see in order kids with anxiety, ADHD, depression, mood issues, and kids on the autism spectrum who've got comorbid mental health conditions to go along with that. So not in the form of anything that we would do as a research study or send to a journal. So informally over like the next 3 months, I would just survey people as they came through for their follow-up visits. And it was one question. Did the problems that brought you to our office impact in any way your ability to attend church or your place of worship? And I was floored by what I found out.
Wow.
And so, interestingly enough, as God would orchestrate things, for about the next 5 or 6 years, after having been involved and having one of the original research grants for Adderall, which became primary treatment or most popular treatment at one point for kids with ADHD, I found myself traveling all over the country doing lectures. And wherever I would go, I would mention something about the work that our church was doing, and they started getting inundated with requests for help. So Key Ministry came about 17 years ago this month, and in particular, our focus was on helping churches to welcome, serve, and include families who had kids with quote-unquote hidden disabilities, as we defined them at the time.
Yeah,
kids with significant emotional, behavioral, developmental, neurologic conditions where there weren't outwardly apparent physical symptoms. You couldn't see the disability in a still photograph of the child. And so we started doing everything that we were doing for free. And as a result, lots of folks started calling us for help. And at the time, the big hot button issue with the explosion in the diagnosis of autism was churches looking for help, you know, for kids with autism spectrum disorders. So if you think about sort of the first wave of the disability ministry movement being, you know, helping folks with physical disabilities, Johnny Erickson Tata, Wheels for the World.
Yeah.
The second phase probably started about 15 years ago when a number of pastors and other prominent people in the church had children or grandchildren with autism. But the whole time that we were serving in this way, I knew in the back of my mind that there was this very large population. And in fact, if you look at the prevalence of disability in children and teens in the United States, 75% of all disability is mental health disability.
Wow.
Really?
Wow.
And 75%.
Yeah. And the church had wrestled for a long time. And I think one of the reasons why, I mean, there are a lot of reasons why I think we were slow to address the issue. But one is that there are lots of good models for doing special needs ministry. I mean, there are thousands of churches around the country that have buddy ministries. There are churches that do respite. There are churches that do, like, you know, Night to Shine or one of the Tebow proms. But there wasn't a model for folks who are interested in doing mental health ministry. And so given the unique gifts and talents on our team, part of what we set out to do about 3 or 4 years ago was to develop a model.
That's great. Well, and you've just come out with a book. What, did it come out this year or last year?
It came out in 2018.
2018.
Titled Mental Health in the Church.
Mental Health in the Church. And I tell you, it is just a great resource. If you're a church looking at how can you serve families who are affected by mental illness, this is a great guide to help you through. I was looking through it again today, and I just love how it's broken down. It is so easy to use and just so user-friendly. And, you know, it breaks down, you know, I love it. The first part, it's like, let's look at the problem. What are the issues? What are the stigma? What are the things that keep families from coming? And then you take that in the part two and you break it all down so that when you have those people say, well, we can't do it because of this, or this is the issue here, well, you break down how to handle that. So let's talk for a minute. What are some of the barriers that families face?
Well, it's interesting you mentioned this, and there's been a great deal of interest in some of our work over the last year or so. There's a study that came out last year that was published by a guy named Andrew Whitehead, who's a sociologist at Clemson, who interestingly enough has 2 sons on the autism spectrum. And it turns out the federal government every 2 or 3 years does something called the National Children's Health Survey. And so as part of this survey, they call approximately 100,000 families around the country. And they ask a very detailed questionnaire. And this is, for example, like when you hear the statistics about the percentage of kids with autism, this is the study from which a lot of that data is derived. Well, it turns out one of the questions that they ask as part of the survey is, has your family attended a church or place of worship in the last year? Mm-hmm. And so what Dr. Whitehead did is that he went through the last three illustrations of this study, like 2012, 2015, 2017, and looked at the correlation between specific disabilities in kids and the likelihood that the family would not attend church. Mm-hmm. And so, to no one's surprise, autism's at the very top of the list. But depression came in second.
Wow.
Right behind that, you're looking at things like anxiety, oppositional defiant disorder, ADHD, kids with PTSD or kids with trauma. And so that, you know, by far and away, the largest population affected by disability that was having trouble doing church were kids with mental health disabilities. Now, it's interesting, the ones that weren't an issue. So that, interestingly enough, in the most recent version of the survey, kids with intellectual disabilities absent autism, their families are no less likely to attend church than those in the general population.
Wow.
Kids with Tourette's, kids with cerebral palsy, no difference there.
Really?
But it's autism and the mental health disabilities that are clearly the barriers.
Yeah. Wow. What do you think the reason for that is? Do you think?
Well, part of what we did in the book, and what's different about this compared to a special needs ministry approach, is that we realized early on that the kinds of kids that we're talking about don't fit in the special needs model. One reason, well, there are a lot of reasons, but one is that the families and the kids in my practice will flee anything that calls attention to them as being different. And what they most want is to be included in all of the things that other kids are doing. But coming back, part of what we recognized was we identified, and these are described in the book, seven things that get in the way of families with kids with disability attending church.
Okay.
The first is stigma. And obviously that's been a significant issue with mental health conditions for
just
a long time.
Just in general.
That's, in general, in particular in the church, but that's probably a conversation for another day. Anxiety is a big one.
Yeah.
And if you think about this from the standpoint of kids or parents, like, you know, imagine one in 15 adults in the United States struggle with social anxiety disorder. And basically, folks who have this have excessive fears that they're being judged or scrutinized by other people. They feel intensely uncomfortable around new or unfamiliar people or entering into a new social situation. Imagine what it's like for a family like that to try to visit a church for the first time. How many different people do you have to meet?
Encounter.
How many folks do you encounter?
Yep.
The third is your capacity for self-control. You know, in that, you know, and there's lots of scripture to support this, that we tend to equate good self-control with godliness and spiritual maturity.
Yeah.
And in the case of families with kids, unfortunately, a lot of the kinds of families we would see in a practice like ours have had significant situations where they felt very judged going to church. And in fact, there was a couple that was, this is a number of years back now, but they were giving their testimony at a special needs Sunday that our church was having. And part of what they were describing was what it was like to find a church for their family in suburban Cleveland when they had a 7- and a 5-year-old boy, each of whom had severe ADHD. And her comment was that people in the church believe they can tell when a disability ends and bad parenting begins. You know, and so that parents are very conscious about that. And I've heard way too many stories of families who've encountered a children's ministry director who suggested that perhaps they might want to check some other place out.
And that's just so heartbreaking to me, you know, that as we hear that time and time again at Rising Above, families going into a church and basically being told, you know, it's okay for you as the parent to come, but we can't, your child is not, your child is not welcome. And I just, that's just so mind-boggling. I mean, that's still happening today, but it does. We hear this so often.
You know, sometimes I think it's because, you know, that there are church leaders who still, despite all the great work that lots of ministries are doing in this area, They're afraid of what they don't understand.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that that is so true. And I think, you know, I often say in our situation, when I come in with John Alex, it's very obvious that he has special needs. We get stares a lot of times, but we get grace too, where a child on the autism spectrum or with ADHD that does not have, it's not so visible other than in their behaviors, those families don't get the grace that some of us who have children who are in wheelchairs or it's a very obvious disability.
Yeah, sadly, that's true. And I think back to our own church, like, what do you do when, you know, when a kid, you know, with severe trauma, who's probably on the autism spectrum, runs out of his Sunday school classroom and starts kicking an 80-year-old lady on her way into church.
Sure.
People don't get it. Yeah,
yeah, and that kind of goes into to Kim, not to get into specifics, but, you know, some of the things that you've dealt with in the children's ministry, where you lead the ministry there, you know, some of the questions that you had. So.
Right, and we're, our church, our body is very open to helping all families.
Like
we're excited to help everyone. And so the questions that come up are often about behavior. Like what you're saying is like the kicking or the running away, or like we had discussed earlier, we have someone who says things that are inappropriate, maybe like for the social situation, not necessarily like inappropriate, but just wrong in the social setting.
Yeah, so coming back to what we were talking about, other barriers, one of them is social communication.
There you go.
You know, so, that if you have some sort of condition that affects your ability to know what the socially inappropriate thing is to say in the moment, or if you struggle with communicating with other people in general, churches are intensely social places.
Wow. So true,
You know, so you have that. There's sensory processing issues, because it's not just an issue for kids with autism.
Yes.
The genes that have been shown to be associated with this are also associated with anxiety and ADHD.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So the last two barriers, one is social isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, families who have a kid with a disability, especially a mental health disability, it's very isolating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Parents can't find babysitters. The kids are less likely to be involved in, like, you know, football or sports or the other extracurricular activities kids do. And they're not coming across families from your church who are in a position to be able to invite them. And then, like, and then the last piece would be sort of like the family's history of attending church. And about 30 minutes into child psychiatry school, I figured out the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. And the kids have issues with, you know, kids who have issues oftentimes have parents with issues.
Right.
And if those folks were never raised with the experience of doing church because, like, a parent had a struggle, it's highly unlikely that kid or that family will ever get into the church. And so part of what we're talking about here, this is not a program, but it's more of a mindset. And so when we would consult with a church, part of what we would be working with them around, and it really has to be like all of the different areas of ministry of the church, is thinking about what are some of the things that get in the way of people being able to fully engage in the activities that take place in your ministry environments, and figuring out ways or implementing a series of strategies to be able to include them.
And I think that's great. And that's part of what you do in the book, again, is you break that down, how you actually go about addressing all of those barriers that you just mentioned. So I would love to hear some success stories. You know, so often in ministry, we hear the ones who were not included, the ones who were not involved, the families who were told, don't come back. But do you have any success stories, stories that you just look at and just...
Churches who are really
doing it well.
I'll go ahead and share a couple. And one place that we've been consulting with now for almost a year is Lakewood Church in Houston. It's the largest church in the country. And so was down there on a Saturday. They probably had about 250 church staff and volunteers show up for training with maybe 3 or 4 days notice. People are tremendously interested. And they, during the course of their service, were having a Sunday where they were focusing on mental health. And so that they interviewed a woman in the church who was a Stevens minister. Husband was unable to go to church because, I don't know if you're familiar with Lakewood, but it's actually in the Houston Rockets old basketball
arena. Right, huge. Yeah,
he has agoraphobia, so that he gets severe panic attacks in confined places where it's difficult to get out without drawing attention to yourself. And so, you know, she's on, you know, she's in a leadership position at church. Her own husband can't come. And so that they went and they approached somebody on the usher team to make sure that he had a seat reserved for him on the aisle in the last row next to the exit so that he could slip away unobtrusively if he needed to. He's been coming to church now for the last 2 years, and he himself is now volunteering on the usher team.
So that's a
really cool success story there. They've also done some great things at that church and recently brought somebody in at our suggestion who is helping all of the children's and youth ministry staff to become trauma informed because they're having more and more kids with these experiences, and their families are being drawn to that church. The other example that I would give, and this was a church that did incredible work within about 3 months' time. It's a non-denominational, like maybe Baptist in its origin church, one of the larger churches in our city, and the one that's really spurred a lot of special needs ministry and was the first host for Night to Shine. And so went in September and did maybe an hour and a half meeting with the staff, laying out some of the principles behind mental health inclusion. And one of the things that's a big issue here, and there was a study by Lifeway Research about 5 years ago, where they surveyed adults who didn't go to church, and more than half of the adults who are unchurched believe that people with mental illness aren't going to be welcome. And so the first thing they did is that the guy who was the founding pastor of the church made about a 5-minute video in October for Mental Health Week. He said, "Hi, I'm Rick Duncan. I'm the founding pastor of Cuyahoga Valley Church, and I want to let you know that people with mental health struggles are welcome and embraced here." Talked a little bit about his own family struggles, where his father was a pastor and had some issues with mental health. They preached then, you know, in line with this, they did a 5-part teaching series on what the Bible has to say about anxiety. They had like a Sunday night, they used a Sunday night worship service to focus on the experience of mental health with 4 or 5 different professionals, people from their congregation who were there to be able to talk about it, answer questions. And then again, another senior leader from their congregation did sort of a 2 or 3 session, you know, sort of short class afterward, you know, to help, you know, to help educate the people in the church.
And that helps take the stigma away. I mean, you're laying it out, you're looking at it, and it takes that stigma.
Talking about it.
And I had 75 children's ministry volunteers and middle school ministry volunteers show up on the Sunday of a home Browns game to get trained in wanting to understand more about how to help kids who are coming to church with emotional and behavioral struggles.
Right.
I mean, so that even within a 3-month period of time that this place has already had a huge impact. And they've made it very clear. And by doing the Facebook video, what they're doing is that they're making available to everyone in their church a tool that they can use to share with their friends and neighbors to let them know that they're going to have a positive experience and that they're going to be welcome.
So what are you seeing churches do? Like that church right there, what are some practical things? I know they're doing the training, but what are some practical things they're putting in place so that when someone who maybe is more anxious comes into that setting, to be prepared for that for them when they come in? Are there things, are they already doing things in preparation, like have things in place, or?
Here, I'll give you an example of something, and I'll throw out a few specifics. One of the things that folks with anxiety struggle with is if you do neuroimaging studies, basically folks with anxiety disorders are hardwired to overestimate the risk entering into new situations. So that one of the things that we suggest to churches is that because more and more people are checking churches out before they visit, is to put as many pictures and as much video up online of what you do at church. So for example, the mom with social anxiety, like, you know, before she even gets in the door to actually make it to church, it's like, you know, am I going to be dressed appropriately? Are my kids going to be dressed appropriately?
So good.
Being able to go to a church website and sort of seeing that, you know, and here's an example. Like, I had a kid who ended up back in my practice after a 3-year hiatus because kid had issues with anxiety, would go to church, but sit in big people's church.
Yeah.
Parents. there's a big push to get everybody to go to the middle school retreat. You know, this kid struggles with separation anxiety. The middle school retreat is held in an island in the middle of Lake Erie can only be reached by ferry only in the daytime. And so when this mom told her son that, you know, he was gone, became severely aggressive, and mom might have gotten hurt had her brother not just happened to drop by the house at the time. And so the more that we can prepare people in advance for things that are different than like what they customarily experience, that can be helpful too. So I tell the high school pastor, I want you to put as many pictures online as you can of what you did at last year's retreat. Like, what are kids going to be doing? Where will they eat? Where will they sleep? What do the rooms look like? What activities are they going to be doing throughout the course of the day? So that would be a real practical one when you think about something like anxiety. I'll share another example of something churches can do. And our most popular blog post of 3 years ago was entitled, "We Had No Casseroles." And this was based upon there was a segment on 60 Minutes where they were talking about the struggles that families had finding mental health care for their teens or young adults in Virginia. And so the reporter had like a group of moms, and he was asking them questions. And the one mom sort of shared their experience like this, that, you know, when our 13-year-old daughter broke her leg in a skiing accident and was in the hospital for a week, every single night somebody from our church was over at the house with a casserole. Yeah. 6 months later, when she overdosed and was admitted to a psychiatric hospital for a week, we had no casseroles.
No casseroles. Wow.
And so do we minister to people and provide them with the same kinds of supports for mental health disabilities as what we would physical disabilities? Even things like churches that are doing respite care, that's an incredible blessing for a lot of our families. Mm-hmm. And so that one of the different strategies that we talk about for churches to consider in doing a mental health inclusion strategy is specifically thinking through some of the ways that they can provide tangible help to their community. So, for example, the church I was telling you about before, they have a counselor who they have hired who is on staff at the church to be able to see people who have struggles. There's another church in our state where they have partnered with their local community mental health center, where they actually have a branch office inside the church, and people who are requesting resources or having struggles can be walked across the hall and have their intake appointment while they're still at church.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, this just several things that you've talked about today. Yeah. I'm like, yes.
I'm like writing down.
Yes, like oh my goodness.
I gotta tell this one.
And I know even for me, like if I'm going into a new situation, I want to know what I'm going into. You know, when I was flying to Maine to see my sister, it was the first time I was flying by myself. Well, I wanted to know where I was going. You know, I wanted to know about the airport, how I was going to get through. And, you know, I think for anyone who gets anxious about, I was anxious. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to know as much information as I could before I went into that setting. So what a great idea for churches.
Yeah. I'll give you another example. So that like there was a church where we were in to train over the weekend. I was spending time on Sunday with the special needs ministry and then went to attend the second worship service. If there was another Lifeway study where they showed that what families impacted by mental illness most wanted from their churches were for their pastors to talk about it from the pulpit. Mm. And, you know, I described the church and did the teaching series, but this church where we're in to train, the following day, the pastor stands up, and when they get to the time for the pastoral prayer, he starts off by saying, you know, "I'd like to take a minute to pray for anyone who's here today who might be struggling with depression." Something as simple as that would give people coming to the church permission to talk about it and share it with other people. And is very helpful in overcoming the stigma.
Right. Yeah.
Even if the whole series, like you're saying, you don't have to do a whole series. You could just do a 1 minute prayer.
Right. Make a point of remembering that's one of the things that we pray about, like in our pastoral prayers.
That's great.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, you mentioned at the beginning of our conversation about Key Ministry and about how it was founded, 17 years ago?
17 years ago.
Out of the need that you saw just in your own practice about families with mental health issues being accepted in the church. So share a little bit more about Key Ministry, what your mission is, what you all do at Key Ministry. This is one of the things that I love about being in ministry with other ministries around the country. We become friends with ministry leaders. And so yeah. Key Ministry is one of our friends in ministry. And we share a lot of what you guys do on our social media. So tell everyone a little bit more about Key Ministry and your heart behind.
So we exist to connect churches with families of kids with disabilities for the purpose of making disciples of Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, my girls, like I have one in med school now, the other one's at college at Belmont in Nashville, which is part of brought me to your neck of the woods today. And, you know, we're blessed, you know, to have the opportunity, you know, the whole time we've been together as a family. You know, had a great church. We've been part of a small group, my wife and I, for over 30 years. We've had great teaching, opportunities to volunteer. Our church greatly blessed the ministry and has done a lot, you know, to support us in becoming an independent entity. I just want other families to have the same opportunity to enjoy, you know, the blessings that my family and I have enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, spanning beyond hidden disabilities, we're helping. Because people with all disabilities need to have an opportunity to hear the gospel and to come to know Jesus. And so, you know, we do this in a lot of different ways. So we do Inclusion Fusion Live, right, which last year was the largest disability ministry conference in the United States. And we are just delighted that Rising Above will be well represented this coming April in Cleveland. We do disability ministry video roundtables that people can jump on for training or to ask questions from around the country, around the world. Those are on every third Wednesday of the month at noon Eastern time. We have a special needs and disability ministry leaders Facebook group that now has over 1,800 disability ministry leaders, involved and connected. You know, we have a website that's a wonderful resource. From time to time, we get out to either individual churches around the country or to larger conferences to be able to train. So that basically we're doing whatever it takes to connect families and churches so that those families with disabilities are able to be welcomed, accepted, and included in the church and in a place where they can use their gifts and talents to honor God and help build his kingdom.
That's great. You also have lots of blogs and things, writings that you put out that are family focused and that are ministry focused. So it's just a great resource there for churches and for families. And that's a lot of what we share. A lot of times we'll share some of your blog posts with our community, some of the great things you're doing. You mentioned this a minute ago, but Inclusion Fusion. Now, this is actually how I got to know you through Jeff. Years ago, you used to do Inclusion Fusion where it was video based. And I know Jeff submitted a video several years ago. I think it's even over here on my bookcase somewhere, the video set from all those years ago.
We used a sermon that he had preached that was absolutely wonderful as part of the last virtual conference. But, you know, even though we're gathering in person in Cleveland, and part of that is sometimes it's just neat to be able to like get connected to your people.
Yeah. We loved it. We loved getting to be at this past April, just getting to meet all you guys and the other ministry leaders.
But all of the presentations, one of the things, because we've always tried to make as much as we can available to churches for free, we live stream all of the main stage sessions. Mm-hmm. And we got somewhere over 200,000 views of those last year.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I got to do that last year. You gave me the opportunity to do that, talking about the book and sharing to speaking to dads.
Yeah,
so that
I believe
was cool.
You're going to have the same opportunity again
this year.
But it's basically a place for ministry leaders. And are you doing family?
Yeah, there's specifically a family track. Okay. And I know that we have a quote-unquote early bird rate of $19 for families to register for the entire two-day conference. Because we do want families to be part of it, because we do have a number of sessions specifically targeting families. And it's important that people in leadership positions hear from families to better understand some of the struggles that they're having.
Sure.
Share a little bit about what we've been, so we know what it's like. But for people who may be interested, walk through kind of what the 2 days looks like and what they can expect.
So what we've historically done is that on Friday, we host several ministry intensives. And I believe there are going to be 3 of those this year. So the idea is people go to a conference, they hear a lecture, wow, this is a great idea, but then 3 months later, they've done nothing about it.
Right.
So that we want people to be able to leave our conference with everything that they need to be able to start their ministry. So that we have an intensive on special needs ministry that's led by Doc Hunsley from out, at SOAR out in Kansas. Together with Beth Golick from, Bay Presbyterian Church and from our own team at Key Ministry. We're going to have an intensive this year on trauma because, particularly churches that have gotten involved, where they have families involved with adoption or foster care ministry, understanding the implications of that and how it can produce hidden disability is really critical. Mm. And so thinking about, how to support those kids and how to support the families that are caring for them is critical. We're also having an intensive related to mental health ministry. Where, this is a half day, it's a half day session. Everybody who comes gets a copy of Mental Health in the Church. And the idea is that you're walking away prepared with everything that you need to put together an inclusion team and to start implementing a strategy at your church.
Yeah.
Well, in addition, so we have, this year we're going to have 3 different times of worship with different main stage speakers. 67 speakers in total.
And now I saw the list. Yeah.
And so last year we had folks from, somewhere between 300 to 400 folks in attendance, and people from 25 states came to the conference.
Yeah.
And so, if this is something that your church is involved with, that if this is something that God is nudging your church to be involved with and maybe nudging you to take the lead, or if you're a family that's struggling and would like to be in a place with other folks with similar struggles and with lots of people with experiences to help support them. Inclusion Fusion Live.
Yeah.
We'd be delighted to have you in Cleveland. It's April 24th and 25th.
I was getting ready to ask.
And we're pretty sure the snow will be melted by then.
I think it snowed last year we were there in April. And I think it either snowed right before we came or like we had gotten home. And I think you had the snowstorm come in. Yeah. Once we got back home. But it's beautiful. The church setting is
so
beautiful.
Cool.
We walked across the street, Lake Erie?
Yeah, we're on the north coast. So there's our church, there's Lake Erie, and then Canada's on the other side. So, when I'm down here in Nashville, I like to, rub it into, our Southern Baptist friends that our church's baptistry is big enough to produce lake effect snow.
There you go. Well, it was absolutely beautiful.
It
Kim
really
and I
was.
Walked across the street.
Yeah.
It literally is right across the street.
Oh, yeah.
And it was just beautiful. And the conference was so great. It's so, it is just a wealth of knowledge, just in that chucked in that 2 days, of just learning.
Yeah,
and
definitely
so,
drinking from a fire hose.
Yeah. You're gonna get a lot. And I love that you have a focus for church leaders, but also for families.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's so important because it does, it affects everything about your life. And so when you're addressing all of that. So Steve, where can people find you? So where can they find you on social media and where can they get more information about Inclusion Fusion?
So I would encourage people, if they're interested in learning more, to go to keyministry.org.
Okay.
There is at the top of the page, you can click, it says IFL 2020 and registration information, a list of all the speakers and a list of all of the breakout sessions and intensive events is up on the website now, and registration is currently open. A couple other places that I would recommend for folks looking for resources is that we do have 2 blogs that are widely circulated. Church for Every Child, which is available on the website, is targeted at ministry leaders. Special Needs Parenting, with a Facebook page accompanying it calling Not Alone, is targeted for families impacted by disability.
Yeah. So that's great. Well, I can't thank you enough for being here. I think you made the trip up here to have this conversation with us today. And I'm so grateful. I've learned a lot.
Yeah.
I know I've just gotten the tip of the iceberg, though, of all the information that's out there, things that we can still learn about mental health in the church. I think, like what we talked about, there is a stigma. There is a stigma related to it, and I think a lot of it is just because of lack of education. People don't know. Mm-hmm. And so once we have that knowledge, we hopefully, once we know better, we'll do better. And right. So I just appreciate you taking the time to have this conversation with us, and we can't wait to be with you again in April at Inclusion Fusion Live in Ohio.
So. Well, I'm delighted to be here with you guys, especially at Christmas time. I mean, there's so many, you know, just great godly people in this part of the country, and I hope that volunteers get to the point someday soon where our Ohio State Buckeyes are going to be going in the next 2.5 weeks.
We'll see, man.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I know Jeff. You know, Jeff was a diehard UT fan, and he used to say he believed that the colors of heaven were orange and white. So I think he probably doesn't care anymore.
I don't think
he cares anymore. But we'll see. We'll see how the balls eventually, where things fall out there.
It's got to swing up at some point.
So again, thank you for your time.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. We would like to thank Jimmy Thorpe and Patrick Mayberry for providing the music for our podcast today. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to leave us a rating and review. This helps others like you find our content more easily. You can learn more about how Rising Above Ministries is encouraging the special needs community by checking out our website at risingaboveministries.org or by finding us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to connecting with you.